This is Alex Elbrook. Cambridge 105
Radio. I'm very pleased that Anthony Carpen, local historian, is back with us today. Now, he has been doing regular updates on finding local history stories that resonate with things happening in the news today. But we've had to take some time out because he stood as a local councillor in the local elections. So that's all gone. And I'm very pleased that Anthony is back today. And we are looking at something which in history you wouldn't believe had happened before. As you say, it's definitely one to warning from history that we should really be taking heed of. This is to do with Anglia Water and an embargo on house building in the 70s.
It is, Alex. And for your older listeners, and by that I mean anyone who is old enough to remember the mid-1970s in Cambridge and South Cambridgeshire, this one is for you. And it's all to do with a time when the water industry was nationalised.
Back in the good old days. When did it become privatised? I can't remember now.
I think it was privatised in the 1980s under Margaret Thatcher's government. Along with several of the other utilities at the time. This is very important because for effectively my generation, i.e. anyone in their very early 40s and younger, the concept of large-scale national industries is something that will be very unfamiliar. And the idea that the government would be in charge of so many different public services compared to what we have today, it's a very, very different structure and mindset of basically how to run cities and countries.
Yeah, and at the time, we thought this was the best thing since sliced bread, I believe. I mean, I was quite young then when things started to become privatised. I feel that we're kind of going full circle now.
And I think this is, again, to take the party politics out of it, I think this is the importance of contemporary local history, as well as contemporary national history, where what historians do in these fields is they go back and look at, for example, the promises that were made by the politicians and election candidates at the time and compare what was promised versus what was actually delivered. And then they do an evaluation and a comparison. Now, this, what we're going to discuss, starting with the 1965 report from Cambridge City Council, is going to sound very familiar to several of your regular listeners who are familiar with our local history.
So which was this then, the 65 report? I was thinking is the embargo that comes sort of 10 years later. Did it all stem from this report in 65? This is to do with water, embargo on new house building because of the lack of water.
It is. Now, this 1965 report is titled The City of Cambridge Public Works Committee Report on the Sewage Treatment Works, and it's by Mr. T.V. Burrows, the City Engineer and Surveyor for Cambridge City Council, dated March 1965. So that title tells us a whole host of things already. It tells us that we had a public works committee for Cambridge City Council, which today we don't. And it also tells us that the sewage treatment works at the time were under the control of, or under the authority of, the Guildhall, which sounds astonishing today. The really interesting thing actually with the report, and it's actually a very technical report, but I'm not going to go into the detail, you'll be glad to know, is actually the introduction that Mr. Burrows, the city engineer and surveyor, and he starts off stating in April 1952, he presented a report on the extensions to the Cambridge treatment works, which basically required the council to eliminate the land treatment of sewage and provide modern works to deal with them. Now, if you look at the old maps of Cambridge, you'll find east of Milton, and there are huge fields which were where the sewage was basically dumped on a big field. And it was near there that they built the new sewage works. And these were completed in 1958. It was assumed by the council that those upgrades would be enough to deal with the expanding population. But within 7 years, they found out that actually the expansion of the population and the demand for water and the capacity needed for the additional sewage was not nearly enough, and by 1965 they had reached that limit.
just to make myself clear, they actually had limits at that point. They said, if you have this much housing, you're going to need this much sewage work. So therefore, once you reach that limit, you don't build any more houses.
I don't think it was particularly limited to the houses, because one of the other things that was happening was the slum clearances.
Okay.
In particular, in the city centre. So we're talking about Newtown. We are talking about Castle End on Castle Hill and also in East Road. Now, one of the things that this is associated with is that the improvements in public health required an increased amount of water to supply it, which meant an increased amount of water to go through. So, for example, the slum houses didn't have their own running hot water, whereas post-war houses did.
Right. Yes. Yes.
And so this is why we come back to the issues of, well, what were the assumptions made at the time? So it's not just a numbers issue. It's, well, what's the quality of housing like? So like I said, by 1965, Mr. Burrow said in this report that actually we have reached the limit.
Wow. Yeah. So what happened then?
Well, he made this report and he said there will need to be an additional three stages to increase the capacity, of which the total cost was given at over £1 million in 1965 money, which is significant.
Yeah.
And people can go to the Bank of England's inflation calculator to find out what that is in today's money, but basically it's far more money than a local council could spend in a relatively short period of time, which is why he broke it down.
And I guess that's why the difference again, that this was coming from central government, wasn't it? So it wasn't that local governments had to find this money.
Correct. And the other thing was that capital expenditure, i.e. spending on infrastructure and buildings, was tightly controlled by the government at the time because of the impact that such large spending had on things like the balance of trade and balance of payments. Well, what happened after that report came through was the creation over the next 8 years of regional water authorities, of which the Anglian Water Authority was one of them. Over those 8 years, little seems to have been done in terms of investing in and upgrading that infrastructure, which is why we come across the astonishing newspaper headlines in early to mid-1970s of the proposed embargoes and moratoriums and bans on house building in Cambridge and in the villages surrounding the city, which I still struggle to get my head around today, given the world that we're living in half a century later.
Absolutely. When you proposed talking about this today, I was absolutely flabbergasted that because Anglia Water could just say, they're right, we're not building any more houses. And then, you know, fast forward to now, there seems to be houses building and then afterwards talking about the fact that there's not going to be enough water. So I'm not quite sure how this disconnect has happened.
And this is something I'm still trying to get my head around, but I think it worked something like this, though it's subject to change, which is one of the beauties of doing, if I can call it, live historical research, is that your conclusions change as the evidence in front of you changes and as you find more things out. That's what historical research is all about. So where we were with 1973 was the Water Authority basically said, we don't have the capacity at the Milton Sewage Works to deal with any more housing. And so what they started doing was they started putting in objections to every medium and large planning application within the city of Cambridge. Now, that meant that the planning committees had to consider the public health impact of all new developments. And if the water company that deals with sewage is saying our system's not going to cope, then that's a very strong reason to refuse the planning application. Had the planning applications been approved, the Water Authority said they would go to the Secretary of State to appeal, and the legal advice that they all had was that such appeals against the granting of planning permission would have succeeded. Wow. And so that's where we come across the idea of the embargo or of the ban, because as far as I'm aware, nobody actually tested that ultimately all the way to the Secretary of State or in court. They just accepted it and said, okay, well, when are you going to complete the works on the Milton Sewage Works? Now, because the Anglian Water Authority could not get the permission or the funding from central government until 1976, the embargo on building was not removed until, I think it was the 1st of January 1978. So that's a good 3-4 years of minimal house building in the mid-70s. And I'd be really interested if any of your listeners have any memories of what it was like in the mid-1970s with that embargo in place. Furthermore, in the South Cambridgeshire villages, there were a number of villages which also had their own small sewage works, which several drains fed into, and they themselves had embargoes that actually started earlier and ended later, with the one in Newmarket over the border in Suffolk, also part of the Anglian Water Area, not actually finishing until 1988.
So what point did this switch then from Anglia Water being able to say, we're not going to have enough water, you need to consider this in your planning, and therefore this housing stopped, to this kind of growth that we've seen in Cambridge, which has just sort of ballooned and the water isn't being taken into consideration? I think you said now that it's the opposite way almost.
Yes, as far as I'm aware, and I'm happy to be corrected on this, when a developer receives planning permission, first of all, the water companies are a statutory consultee, so they have to be consulted on what the developer needs to do in order to connect up their systems. But secondly, the developers, I believe, have the automatic right to do this subject to the terms and conditions in the planning permission. The situation we're now in, as has been heavily documented, is that our systems are unable to supply or meet the requirements of the proposed levels of house building that are A, already happening, and are B, proposed to happen between now and 2040, i.e. the end of the next planning period, because the consultants to the City and District Council, Stantec, wrote in a report from 2020, the house building after 2030 cannot be supplied with water from the aquifers. The aquifers will be beyond capacity. Yet Anglian Water's proposed Chatteris Reservoir won't be on stream until 2037 at the earliest.
That's not that far away. We're in 2023 now, aren't we? So, you know, we're talking in the next few years. So it's really quite relevant and very pressing problem.
It is. And the really strange historical quirk, if I can call it that, is where we are now is almost the same place as where Cambridge City Council was in 1965, with 8 years to go before the crunch point. Is history going to repeat itself?
Oh, I hope not. I hope not. But I don't know what anyone's doing to stop that. Thank you very much, Santi. And if people want to hear more about or read more about your blogs on this, where can they find them?
They can basically go to lostcambridge.com, which is my WordPress local history site, and the latest blog post, and I'm going to be doing a series of these looking at our water infrastructure. It will tell you the local history, and it's something I'm glad to say some local councillors have been very interested in, and again, start the discussion locally of how collectively we can deal with these risks, mindful that obviously everything to do with sewage has been in the news.
Thank you very much for that, Anthony. Drawing these things to our attention is so important, and I really thank you for that. I look forward to speaking to you again soon.
Thank you. Cambridge 105 Radio.